In this week's Cold September, one of the short stories from the Cold September collection, Touch of the Spider. This DIY Svalve story came into the world at the request of Hodder, who were looking for the short to promote the series. This is the type of short that could easily have been an 80,000 word novel if I'd wanted to write a novel at that point, but I needed a 3,000 word short, so that's what it became. So we have the bare bones of the story without convoluted background stories, red herrings or extensive character development. As ever, I had a starting point, in this case the killing of a cyclist on a Highland road, and then the rest of it came from there. The first draft came in a couple of days. It's not really about spiders. Touch of the Spider. The cyclist has been dead for over an hour. Claire Stuyvesant tipped from behind by a car, rear wheel buckled, bike tossed off to the side, body punted 20 yards down the road. Her neck is unnaturally bent, making it impossible to look at her without wincing. Eyes open, staring at the sky, head twisted, lying on her front. There's a cold wind coming up the glen, a single track road now blocked in either direction. There being a cul-de-sac, there are never many cars up this way in any case. Emily Borden, the victim's neighbour, living at the top of the glen, got out of her car and stood staring at the body for a while. She seemed curious, a little concerned rather than shocked. After we took a preliminary statement and arranged for someone to visit again later today, she drove her Land Rover Discovery over the heather at a 45-degree angle around the scene of the crime. Dr. Sanderson, the pathologist out from Inverness, approaches, removing thin latex gloves as he comes. "Detective Inspector Westfall," he says. "Nice to see you getting your hands dirty." "Doctor?" I nod in turn. Detectives wouldn't usually attend a road traffic accident, but the police in the scene called it in straight away, this being the third cyclist killed within a week. "Brutal death," says Sanderson. "Thrown forward, obviously. Tried to break her fall with her right arm. Snapped like a twig." He pauses for the moment, and I can sense him rejecting the cliche, wishing he'd thought of something more original. "Neck buckled on impact. I'd say there's one clean break in her arm, but her neck is a mess. You know how many vertebrae there are in the neck?" I probably should. "7, he says, when I don't answer. "They've all been crushed." He glances back at the corpse, then looks over the scene. 1 ambulance, 2 paramedics, 3 police cars, 7 officers. Hills on either side, the flat grey of a dull early autumn day lifted by the luminescent purple of the heather. No moisture in the cold air. Up the glen, keeping a watchful eye, a herd of deer. In the field beside us, sheep standing as far away from the action as possible. "Lovely spot for it," says Sanderson after a while. I can feel the dead cyclist weep for the husband she'll never hold again. Her spirit lingers, unable or unwilling to break free. She's the hair standing in the back of my neck, the shiver that touches my spine. I know that she'll not remain with the corpse. She will be my companion. Standing with Detective Sergeant Sutherland in the ops room back at the station, looking at the photographs of the 3 victims. 1 woman, 2 men. They've all been wearing lycra in the bright colours of the day. The first victim, Dom Colrose, took a direct hit from the front. Abdomen flattened, then in the estimation of the Sokos, the driver had reversed over the body, one of the tyres slipping off the skull onto the neck. The other 2, Stuyvesant and Dan McGowan, were struck from behind. Similar effect, though McGowan's back was broken. Unlike the others, he was still technically alive when he was discovered, died in the ambulance on the way to Inverness. "If we narrow the potential perpetrators down to every motorist in the UK who hates cyclists," says Sutherland, "we can reduce the list of suspects to about 15 million. Lovely dry delivery. Sutherland takes a bite of donut, chews for the moment, then has a slug of coffee. 3 separate incidents, in 3 different locations, more than 50 miles apart. No link between the victims. Corrose, a mechanic, 51. Stuyvesant, an architect, 33. McGowan, retired fisherman from Wick, 60. "I don't buy it," I say. Sutherland takes another glug from the cup, then uses it to indicate the board. "What?" he asks simply. "I know you were joking about every driver hating these guys, but that's still the go-to explanation. We're all thinking it. The only thing that connects them is fluorescent lycra. Our killer just had enough, but they didn't see red, they saw luminous lime green. That's what I'm not buying." Sutherland tips the rest of the cup of coffee into his mouth and then uses the empty cup to point at the board again. What do you think? I can feel the sadness of Claire Stuyvesant. She's here with us, as much as the whiteboard and the table and the 7 chairs and the ficus that gives life to this cold, windowless room where the bodies of investigations are dissected. Someone wanted one of these people dead, so they killed the others to make it look like a thing. That's what we need to do, pin down that one, and then we'll find the others were random. So for the moment, 3 separate murder inquiries, working on the basis that 2 of them will go nowhere. Who wanted one of these people dead? That's the question. Sutherland takes a drink from the empty cup. Not bad, he says. Neighbours see things, they know, of less use to the investigating officer if they're friends with the victim or they fought over the height of the garden hedge. However, if they're disinterested, they'll still have seen who came and went. They'll still have heard words spoken too loudly.
Always putting things in bins, says Dan McGowan's neighbour. An old row of terraced houses in Lairg.
Fascinating little woman, bent double, a walking stick around spectacles, hair on a net. What do you think he put in the bins? There's a pause. We can hear her sucking her teeth.
Body parts,
she sniggers. Lovely music, says Emily Borden, who seemed detached to find her neighbour, Claire Stuyvesant, dead in the middle of the road. That's what I'll remember. Didn't see the husband much, travels a lot, something in banking. Works in Edinburgh, far as I know. He works in Inverness. We didn't really talk much. What kind of music?
Classical. It's such a broad term, all sorts, big, sweeping orchestral pieces a lot of the time, now that I think about it. Choral too, and string quartets.
Well, she worked.
Yeah, it's a nice studio with a view down the glen. She'd have the window open in spring and summer, autumn, if it wasn't too cold.
A pause, a wistful look in the direction of the glen, even though we can't see it from where we're sitting.
She liked Walton. Guess I'll have Nimrod at the funeral, what do you think?
Nimrod was Elgar.
Oh.
Had it coming. Some neighbours are angry. Tom Corrose's neighbour is angry.
Go on. Every damn evening. I mean, don't get me wrong. We got on fine, Tom and I. At least, you know, we never spoke to each other, which is all you can ask of a neighbour, right?
That's what Jesus would have said. Go on, I say again.
But always work home with him, didn't he? Every evening had a car out there, jacked up, clanking away with a doofer.
Doofer?
A thing. I don't know what it's called. But I mean, you can't even pay the car without making a lot of noise, can you? It's just not possible. It's not just me. Everyone along this street was fed out of him. Ask them.
We already have. He's not wrong.
Did you all complain?
Of course. Told you to bugger off, didn't he?
Did you complain to the local police?
He says with the accompanying eye roll. Same answer.
You think someone might have been annoyed enough to take matters into their own hands?
He leans forward, a snarl on his lips. Holds the stare. We've asked the question of 6 people along this street so far, and every one of them has given the same answer.
I don't know who out of this lot would have had the cojones, he says, but I'd have given them an alibi if they'd asked.
When I go to bed, Claire Stuyvesant is still with me. I've become her passage from this world. She cannot let go while there's unfinished business. I sense dead people around me. I've not looked for it. Don't look for them. There's nothing logical in this irrational notion. They come or not. Sometimes they talk. Sometimes they hover on the edge of consciousness, a feeling, rather than a physical presence. How can I read anything into it? Are they there at all, or is it just me, my subconscious, creating ephemeral vision, plucking something from the air around me that does not exist? I lie in bed, one hand behind my head, the other resting on my stomach. I don't know where Claire Stuyvesant is. Standing next to me, lying in the bed, sitting on the floor in a corner, knees drawn up, head hung low, weeping. I can't tell. Yeah, I know that she's here, and neither Dan McGowan nor Tom Corrose are present. They've stopped off somewhere before departing this world. It's not with me. So what brings Claire Stuyvesant to my bedroom late at night on the day of her murder? It's more personal with her. Why else is she here? The first 2 were the cover. Claire Stuyvesant, the 3rd kill, was the intended victim all along. May well be that the cover story is not complete,
and there'll be more death before this is done. And your wife got on well with the neighbours. There aren't many of you up that far end of the glen. Interview at the station with Alan Stuyvesant, the widow. Flew in last night from a business trip to Berlin. Tired and red-eyed, possibly self-medicated. Long stares off into nowhere. He looks up, shakes his head, tries to draw himself back to the present, picks the question out of the past. You know, she was great. Claire was great, she really was. Got along with everyone. I give him a moment, waiting to see if there's a follow-up. I can see his eyes drift away. I glance at Sutherland, who shrugs in response. How about Mrs. Borden, I ask. There's no actual reason why I should be asking that question other than a hunch. I can't take a hunch into court. He drags himself back from the great beyond, focuses on me, takes a moment to recall the question and then says, Mrs. Borden. We stare at each other while he thinks about it. Some seconds pass, I don't rush him. Time is elastic. I read something in his eyes, another hunch. It's fine, Mr. Stuyvesant, I say. We won't keep you. I know how difficult it must be for you at the moment. We'll see you out. Take care of whatever it is you need to, and we'll speak to you again tomorrow morning. Heavy sigh, drawn from the depths. Eyes on the table, he rises. Sutherland and I rise with him. Shake my head, noticing the cobweb above the door. Goddamn spiders, I say. Every damn autumn. Sutherland and Stuyvesant glance up. No one is terribly interested. Idle words tossed out and left behind as we leave the small room we use for witness interviews. Alan Stuyvesant has no more to say. Sutherland and I stand by the window in the open plan office, looking out on another grey morning, the crows and the autumn trees in Knockfarrel Hill. A cup of coffee each, Sutherland clutching his regulation, sugar frosted. Cobweb line was a little transparent, he says. You think he saw through it? About the time he looked right into the CCTV camera. Had to be sure we got a good image. Get it over to Borders and Customs. Let's see if he really has been out of the country for all of the last 3 weeks. If Alan Stuyvesant knows what's coming, he doesn't show it. He does not run. He does not react. Soon enough, we have proof of him leaving Scotland 2 weeks ago, returning the next day on a false passport, making the reverse trip after the death of his wife. Using facial recognition software, we get him in Inverness buying an old Range Rover, which he did using the same name as the passport. We haven't yet located the car, but we have footage of it in the vicinity of the murders. He was clever enough to avoid having any witnesses to the deaths, and he is Alphonse McIntyre, the lawyer all these people want. But we have motive, and money, and false names and enough to take it to the procurator. He sits in silence. He doesn't yet refuse to answer questions. He doesn't speak at all. The middle-aged, like the brigade, can ride in peace, says Sutherland caustically as we leave the interview room. The following afternoon, called to hit and run in the 832 between Rosemarkie and Cromarty. A bike buckled and broken at the side of the road. A man in pink punted 15 feet over the low fence into a field of sheep. The sheep fled. Sutherland and I, in our familiar positions, surrounded by the usual array of emergency road accident staff. This time the road is a lane in either direction, being able to keep it open. Cars pass occasionally, they slow, they glance over. Sometimes someone will stop and ask, and we usher them on with a familiar platitude. We pay attention to every car that passes because the killer who returns to the scene as soon and as innocently as possible is not a rare beast. He must have an accomplice, he says. It's obvious. I don't know, I say, nodding, acknowledging Sutherland's attempt to find us an out. A reason why we're right to have Alan Stuyvesant in custody when the killer has struck again. To have made the arrest, to be preparing the charges. That silence of his, maybe he was doing something completely unrelated that he doesn't want to own up to. Like what? Sutherland, sceptical. We know very little about this man, Sergeant. People do things. People have things in their life. There's no way to tell until we have more information. Maybe he was having an affair that involved buying a beat-up old Range Rover. I don't have an answer, so let the question go. There are options here, says Sutherland, but either way, he wasn't not involved. There's an accomplice in play, or else this has been done by someone entirely different who just thought, the hell with it, open season than the middle-aged men in Lycra. Maybe it was an accident. The driver panicked and thought, wait, I can just leg it, and the police will think it was the same killer as before. Whatever, Stuyvesant remains implicated in the first three deaths. We need to get him to talk, I say. If you've got the right man, why is it that I can yet feel the haunting of Claire Stuyvesant, her hand on my shoulder, her face leaning against my neck, her warm tears on my skin? I shiver and reach unthinkingly into my pocket for my phone. It rings. Alice, I say, answering, turning away from Sutherland. Sir, I've found something, says Constable Cole. You should get back here. I catch Sutherland's eye, click the phone off and slip it into my pocket. We find Emily Borden at home polishing the Discovery. The facade gleams in the pale afternoon sun, having just been washed, and when we arrive at her house, she's on her haunches, vigorously cleaning the bumper. After the quick look over her shoulder at the sound of their arrival, she returns to her work. We stand and watch her for a moment. If there was any surface evidence to be scrubbed from the bumper, it will already be gone. However, the chances that she will have accessed the onboard computer and scrubbed the analytics revealing the deactivation of the airbags or the impact at the front of the car are minimal. The bumper will also give up its clues no matter how hard she wipes it down. You're under arrest, says Sutherland. Proved right, I'm happy to let him control the narrative of this short scene. She stops rubbing, takes a moment, looks at the bumper, decides presumably that there's nothing else to be done, then glances over her shoulder. I don't think so, she says. It's not a crime to clean your car in Scotland, is it? They sit silently together. We decided to place them side by side, handcuffed to the desk, watching the CCTV footage of them leaving the Highland Hotel in Wick 4 weeks previously. Smiling as they went, another camera catching their kiss in the car before they headed back out onto the A9. Doesn't prove a thing, says Borden when the short film is finished. Nope, I say. Sutherland is behind, standing at the door, arms folded. Cole is on the other side of the small room, hands behind her back. I guess not, but we have enough to charge you, and we'll spend the next few weeks interviewing you, and this is the last time you'll see each other until you're taken into court, and when you're on your own, you'll break. No, we won't, she says, squeezing the words from between thin, bitter lips. Stuyvesant tries to reach out to her, but the chains are marginally and cruelly just too short. Sergeant, take Mrs. Borden back to her cell, please. She curses loudly, dramatically, a single word spat in my direction. A drop of saliva lands in Stuyvesant's face, but he's impassive. Sutherland roughly grabs her wrists, unlocks the handcuffs, drags her to her feet and marches her out of the room. The door closes. I'm not in the mood for game playing, hedging, talking around the subject, hoping we can get a minor breakthrough. We do speak to other people, Mr. Stuyvesant. We know about you and Claire fighting. We know about the shouting and the slamming doors, Claire crying in the picture window, the lonely world of a remote Scottish glen for company. And we know that you and Emily Borden were having an affair, and you can fight it all the way if you want. But you know Mrs. Borden. You know the type of person she is. We all know the Mrs. Bordens of the world. She will not go lightly, and when it comes to it, she will throw everything under the bus as she tries to stay out of prison. A moment. He holds my gaze and slowly his eyes slip away. That includes you, I say. Alan Stuyvesant swallows. He looks at Constable Cole. He does not have the conviction of a triple murderer, but culpability cloaks him like dust. End of the day, Sutherland and I standing at the window of the office open plan. I no longer feel the presence of Claire Stuyvesant, and I'm no more surprised by this than I am by the unmasking of the murder of this widow. I was shadowed by the spirit for the reason, and now the reason's gone. Do spirits have any free will, or are they naturally occurring phenomena? They happen or they don't. They linger or not. The weight has been loosened, her killers have been unmasked, and the wraith has vanished. And now the body in the mortuary aside, there's nothing of Claire Stuyvesant left on the earth. Alice said he crumbled like a house of cards, says Sutherland after taking a drink of tea. Yes, I say, nodding, he did. He You know the guilt is at its strongest when you don't even wait for the lawyer. Mrs. Borden, on the other hand, he says, making a small gesture with his cup, might be time to open an investigation into the car accident that killed her husband 4 years ago. Already got Alice looking at it, I say. There's a window open, the smell of an autumnal smoky fire drifting in. We can hear the traffic heading out in the Strathpeffer Road, the crows marking angry circles in the sky.